Well, I thought everybody deserted tonight since I was a teacher, but I guess some of us were just a little late tonight. Got other things happening, so we're glad that everybody's here that is here. My subject is a little bit different than what we have studied so far. We've been studying about the moral qualifications of officers of the church. In other words, the attributes that the man possesses and his actions and his character. And those are included tonight because he has to have the right attributes to be able to carry out what we're going to talk about tonight. And our study tonight, the text is in 1 Timothy 3, 4, and 5. We're back to the same passages again, but we're getting through them. We're about through them all. And Titus 1 and 6. And I'll just read those three verses. In 1 Timothy, one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence, for if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? And Titus 1 and 6, if a man is blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination. So, as you can see, these qualifications are domestic and interpersonal qualifications. How he deals with others, specifically his own family. But we're going to also talk about some about the church, about his personal relations with people in the church, and these skills that the man must have, and the influence that he should exert on his family and on the church as the leader of his family, and if he is an elder or a deacon on the church also. And also, I just wanted to mention, I don't know that we have, we may have mentioned this, I don't know, but if we have, we haven't much. But I think it's important that we mention the study of the qualifications of officers, elders or deacons, applies to current officers and prospective officers. A man can become unqualified if he is an officer by his own actions or by his family members, either before he assumes office or after he assumes office. There's really no, it's not a once you're in, you're always in type of a deal. The qualifications apply because the office requires qualifications for a man to discharge his duties even after he's in. Any thoughts or comments that you have about the introduction here? It's pretty simple. Okay, so let's start out. I'm just going to try to dissect these little phrases in the verses. Not necessarily. We'll kind of look at times. We'll look at both verses or both passages at the same time. But let's look at husband of one wife to start with, because that's the way the verse goes. Obvious. This is pretty obvious. At least part of it is. If you're the husband of one wife, you can't be the husband of two wives. You can't be single. You have to be married to one woman. That's pretty self-explanatory. However, if a man is unscripturally divorced, he would not be qualified either, would he? Number one, he would be single. But let's say he's unscripturally divorced and he is remarried. And now, unscriptural is the key word there. If he is remarried, if the divorce, and it's unscriptural, you know, if the divorce was his own doing or his own fault, then he's still married to his wife, his first wife, in the eyes of God, even though he may be legally married by the laws of the land. So therefore, he would be married to two women, wouldn't he?
Well, he'd be married to one and adultery
to the other. Well, right. That's true. But he would be married to two. Well, he'd be married to one in the eyes of the law of the land, but it would be the second one. So,
one of the things that we see with the qualifications is that more oftentimes than not, it's not just one qualification that will prohibit an individual from assuming the office of an elder or assuming the role of a deacon. In this situation, I suppose there might be some debate about whether that person's a husband of one wife, but the issue is they're no longer blameless, are they?
Right, right. And if the divorce is his fault, then he's going to be guilty of something else, one or two other things also. So that's a good point. And there's several reasons why an elder or a deacon must be married and not be single. And I think we'll kind of, if those don't just pop up in your head right now, I think they'll become evident as we talk about this tonight. The first thing that came to my mind is basically, if you're single, like Kevin, it's pretty easy to live at home by yourself. if you want to go out and eat cashew chicken, you go. If you want to stay home and eat a sandwich, you do that. You don't have to argue with anybody about it, do you? Yeah. I had cashew chicken at noon today. The other big thing is by being married, and the other requirement of having children, then you have someone who, has that whole aspect of their life and learns how to deal with children and raise them correctly. And, as the Scripture says, the last part of 1 Timothy 3 and 5 says, how will he take care of the church of God if he can't rule his house? In other words, it's easier to rule your own house than it is the church, or to guide your own house. And when I say rule, I'm using it in the sense that the Bible uses it, to lead, to shepherd, to guide, and at times, to say, to make the hard decisions of discipline. Because, we expect our own home, our own children to understand, and if they don't, it's too bad when they're in the home. But when it's the church, it's not your own flesh and blood. It's a different relationship, and it is harder. It is harder, Dwayne.
Yeah, I think talking about the advantage for being married. Well, just stop and think, trying to raise a physical family single.
Yeah.
Single parent.
Yeah.
It's just better with two, because, and I think it's the same in the church too, because there's many times that, I'll miss hearing something or miss seeing something that the wife can sometimes can help with. The question, maybe we're going to touch on the question, if an elder's wife dies,
I really wasn't. I go ahead. I wasn't going to, but go ahead.
Yeah. Does that disqualify?
Yeah.
I don't think it does. But personally, I found it very difficult. I found it much more difficult because it's just good to have the second pair of eyes and ears to help you and to kind of help keep you.
Yeah, and then you get into the school of thought. Obviously, if an elder loses his wife to death, then obviously that was not his. It's no one's fault, and he was the husband of one wife. He fulfilled that qualification, and since it's not his fault, does that disqualify him? So there, we're not told specifically, and I would think that it. it's just my opinion, but I would think that it would just depend on the circumstances of the church, you know. If the church is desperately in need of that one person, and they probably would be if there wasn't another one, you know, but if, let's say, there was three or four elders, you know, it might not be nearly as important that that one man remain an elder, so the situation might be different, Ted.
I was just going to mention on that subject, this is kind of a big picture idea, but there's sometimes where the language of the Bible is deliberately flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And this might be one of those situations.
Might be.
God could have been more specific, and it just wasn't.
Yeah.
And so, like you said, we may have some liberty to make that decision according to our own judgment, depending on the circumstances.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, if you have a congregation, and there are those, and my mom's a part of one of them, and I remember when I was a kid, we went to Inc. And if we weren't there, if my dad was not there to lead songs, there was no male song leaders. Well, what do? You not sing at all? Well, one of the women just starts the song from her seat. And that happens on occasion at Scotland when Kevin's brother-in-law is not there. I did find out that the other day that his brother-in-law was not there, and guess who led psalms? Well, nevertheless, he led the singing, didn't he? You didn't tell us that, Kevin. Okay.
This, Mike, what do you think this, when it talks about this one, a man with one wife, I get the feeling that the idea is not polygamy or not
right.
Two wives at the same time or more.
For sure.
Whereas somebody might argue and say, well, you can't put this man in because he's been married to two women. You know, his first wife died and he the second one. They're saying, well, he's had two wives. He can't. You know, sometimes I think we maybe shoot ourselves in the foot because we're maybe don't get the feel of what it's really trying to say.
Yeah. But also, if you look at Titus 1 and 6, it's talking about the present tense also. It says, if a man is blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, etc. It's talking about now.
That's at the point of appointment, isn't it?
Right. Right.
You know, we all understand, based off of the passages of the widow, the younger widow, that she is free to marry. She's no longer married. You know, once your spouse dies, you're not married to that person anymore. They're now dead. You're no longer married. So if your wife passes on, then you know, you're free to marry. Which is, in my mind, why. If we had an individual who was married, their wife passed, it would not be appropriate for us to put that person in as an officer, even though they were at one time married, and maybe, you know, that marriage was fine. Maybe they meet all the other qualifications, but they're presently not married. But I have a hard time extending that same line of argument to the elder who is in office and his wife passes away.
Yeah.
I see those as two separate things, and that might be a contradiction, but I just view it that way.
Okay.
I might just throw up an interesting thought that I already talked to them about before, that what happens if their child, if they had had children and they were faithful and they passed away when they were in their 20s from an accident, I would think they still, because I thought of this probably because you were making an issue of it being present tense,
mm-hmm.
which is appropriate. But I think people could also have raised children or a child who was faithful, and later, you know, this person's been put in office in their 60s or whatever.
Yeah.
I think they still could be qualified, even if they no longer have living children. That's something that I can discuss.
That's a good point. And we'll spend quite a bit of time talking about the children, but that's a good point. Okay, well, let's... just a little bit more about the husband of one wife, and this is something that we don't normally think of when we just read that husband of one wife. We think, well, he's married. But what about the wife? Let's talk about the wife for just a minute. In Titus 3 and 11, if somebody would read that, and also somebody read 1 Timothy 2, 9 through 12. And a point that I want to make here is just as the elder and the deacon have to have qualifications, the wife also has to be qualified. Because she can either be a great help and partner to her husband, or she can disqualify him. Somebody want to read Titus 3 and 11?
Actually, I'm going to read verse 10.
I'm sorry. Hold on, Bob. I think that's not right. What was I?
It's 1 Timothy.
1 Timothy. Okay, sorry.
What is it?
1 Timothy 3 and 11.
Okay. Likewise, their wives must be reverent, not slanderers, temperate, faithful in all things.
Okay. What am I looking for?
Then the next verse says, let deacons be the husbands of one wife, ruling their children in their own house well.
Right. But I don't have it right in front of me. Yeah. I don't have it, but it basically, it also said that she must be reverent, not a slanderer, temperate, and faithful in all things, and modest. So, there's several qualifications there that the wife must have. And so, by her actions or inactions, she first has to be obedient to God, just like her husband, and submit to her husband in the Lord. Then they will both be able to teach their children and be proper examples.
So, can I ask a question?
Sure.
I'm just curious about this. Here in 1 Timothy 3, I've always understood that verse 11 is talking about the wives of deacons.
Well, it is.
But
specifically, it is.
Okay. And not the wives of elders. And I...
Okay, why would you say not the wives of elders?
Well, I mean, wouldn't reason just tell us that that's kind of foolish to think that the one would have to be these and not the other?
Yeah.
I think. I mean, it... Well, but I guess I think about the role... I've never thought of it this way. The way I've always looked at it is the role of an elder requires him to have a wife to understand the issues that he's going to have to address. But oftentimes that elder is going to need to make those decisions separate from his wife. And it might not always be, it might never be appropriate to share with his wife the matters that he's having to deal with. Because his role is a spiritual role.
True, but this verse doesn't say that he has to share those things. And look at verse 12. It's almost an exact word-for-word statement as it is in verse 4. Rules his own house and his children well. Almost identical to the elder. And I think these qualifications are the same for both.
He uses the word, I think this is the New King James. It says, likewise, their wives, their meaning the two officers, elders and deacons.
Well, I don't know.
It's talking about deacons.
Verse 10 specifically talks about a deacon. And I think I read verse 11 to mean the deacon's wife. But also, if you take all these passages together, verse 12 is identical qualifications to the elder's wife. And like Glenn said, why would, the office of elder is even more, what's the word I'm looking for?
Sensitive,
but I guess I was looking for harder to attain maybe than a deacon. Just, an elder should have more knowledge of the scriptures than a deacon, if possible, not always, but...
they have more qualifications.
Yeah, they do have more qualifications, but the role of the wife, as far as I can see, is pretty much the same.
you know, should, I think for either one, especially the bishop or the elder, I think the wife has to be faithful in all things. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't exactly say that, but I think it's inferred.
Yeah, you know, in 1 Timothy 3 and 2, it says, well, that just says a husband, one wife there. But then as far as, you know, I mean, as far as sharing all things with his wife, I mean, I don't think a deacon is, you know, the role of a deacon is, that's not, I don't discuss with Linda all the things that I discuss with Jay and Clayton, and I don't, they probably don't with their wives either. Not that it's some big secret, but is there a necessity for that? So,
well, here's another thought too. I was talking to Clayton, his lesson's coming after yours. He mentioned to me that he made a list of all the qualifications for elders and deacons. And one of the things I remember him mentioning to me is that a deacon is not to be double-tongued. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mention that about an elder.
But isn't that implied in the other qualifications?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That it obviously would be implied, yeah. I would say.
Is that, do you have other thoughts on that, Ben?
I'll mention one thing that's related to Ben. You can't think of something to say.
Well, no, I've never understood the passage to mean that it speaks of elders' wives. I've always understood that there are no qualifications for an elder's wife, that she just must exist and sort of be faithful, because if she's not...
But what kind of logic would that make if you have all these qualifications for a deacon's wife? In other words, you're saying that the deacon's wife is more important than the elder's wife, right?
I think there's different roles.
Well, there may be different roles,
and
but...
By that, I mean, if, I'm not trying to use logic. I'm just trying to use what I see in the Scripture. I see this discussion of wives bracketed by two discussions of deacons. So it seemed odd to me that we talk about elders' qualifications, then we talk about deacons' qualifications, then we talk about elders' and deacons' wives, and then we go back to deacons. It just seems to me that as we look at the flow of the Scriptures, it makes more sense that that's talking about deacons' wives. Now, whether we say that what's a good thing if an elder's wife has those same qualifications, I think that's different than saying those qualifications apply to elder's wives. I just never viewed it that way. I've just always viewed it as these are deacon's wives' qualifications. Because they handle physical matters, which, I don't know, I guess in my own thinking, sometimes those physical matters involve the wife. I don't know, I just never looked at it that way.
Did you have something to say?
Yeah, you can go ahead and I'll.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I definitely believe that these qualifications would disqualify a person, a man being a deacon, but I also think it would disqualify a man being an elder. I mean, I don't think that would be stretching the Scriptures too far. I think, like Tad said, that the Lord writes these things in such a way that there's quite a bit of leeway.
Yeah.
There has to be, because there's nobody perfect, and so there has to be a lot of judgment in, is this man going to be a good either elder or deacon?
Yeah. And you know, what sense would it make if an elder just had to have a wife and that was the only qualification, what if she wasn't a member of the church? Or what if, you know, what if she was a member of the church but obviously didn't live the way she should? How would that reflect on him?
I guess I
don't see what I'm saying.
I agree with that. I think that can be covered under the rules as how.
Well, it would. Yeah, it would. All right, let's move on if we don't have any more. That's page one. Clayton's going up here. The way we're going, I'm going to be here 3 weeks. Okay. Let's move on to ruling his own house well. The first thing that I think that we you might take issue with this, but I don't think that you would. But my thought is that it's impossible for a man to rule or guide his own house well unless he has some level of cooperation from his household. In other words, if his wife and or children absolutely are dead set opposed to him and he gets no cooperation from them, how could he rule well? You know, it's a joint effort. Just as the husband and wife union is the combination, or whatever you want to call it, is a joint effort. The relationship between the father and his children, or the mother and her children, are different than the relationship between the husband and the wife. Obviously, it's completely different. They're children. They're not a spouse. And in a Christian household, little children obey first out of love for mom and dad. They want to be like mom and dad. Paige and Reese want to marry their daddy. They want to marry somebody, and the first person they pick is their daddy. So, we see this when they're very little, and then when they get to be about junior high, things change drastically, don't they? They get this rebellious attitude, some of them a little bit, some of them a lot. And then in a few years, as they mature, and I'm talking about a Christian household, in a few years as they mature, they realize that their parents have raised them correctly and the things they've done for them, and they again treat mom and dad like they should. So, that's my view of a Christian household. Maybe yours is somewhat different, but I would think it's pretty much the same. It is. We'll talk about it. But I don't think any man can rule his own house well unless his wife and children realize that he's the final authority and they have to submit to what you might call a final decision. The husband doesn't make all the decisions, the wife doesn't make all the decisions. And I'm sure neither one of them want to. But when there's disagreement, there has to be final authority, just as there is in the church. And, on earth, it's the elders. And in our hearts or in the big scheme of things, it's God, of course. The elders can't shepherd a congregation unless the members submit to their authority. The members may not always like the decisions, even though they may support that elder, and they should support that elder. And really, I think if we don't support an elder, I don't see hardly how we can be a member of that congregation. Not that we might agree with everything they do, but in whole, if we don't give our elders, our evangelists, our support, then I almost think we need to find another home, or unless the elders are erring in the scriptures, and that's a different subject. But we need to remember that members voluntarily follow the shepherd. The shepherd, remember Kevin's lesson about the shepherd and the sheep, and the shepherd leads, and the sheep follows, and the shepherd does not force the sheep to follow, and he can't, because they'll scatter. If you try to get around behind them, they do this. And God allows us as individuals to choose His way or go our own way. So the same is really true in the household. If members of the household don't cooperate with the father, then things are going to be pretty tough, and he very well may not meet the qualifications. Any thoughts or comments on that? We've got more to talk about there.
I think that's right. A man could be a very good person and a good leader and a humble shepherd-like leader, like you're talking about. But it really takes the cooperation of the wife and the children. They could disqualify him, even though he was really a good man.
A lot of times we see, I don't want to say a lot of times, there's times that we see in a family where the children will pit the mother against the father, or the father against the mother, and and the two don't cooperate with each other, that doesn't make for a very healthy situation. And if you had a situation like that, I would say that, and that would probably be obvious to people that observed you in the family, that would probably disqualify you. In other words, just like you said, the two have to really work together.
Yeah. Okay, now, having said all that, if they need the cooperation, and he does, but even though that's true, the first and ultimate responsibility for the cooperation of the house lies with the father. It's his job, it's his responsibility to do everything he can to make sure that cooperation exists, because God has designated him as the head of the family. Just as Christ is the head of the church and Savior of the body, Ephesians 5:23-24. So he can't just say, well, my wife and kids don't like me and I can't get along with them, so I'm not qualified, and, you know. Well, why not? You know, figure the problem out, do the best you can to solve it, and you know, be a man, be a father, be a leader. That's what the church needs. And with that authority that comes from God first, you know, comes the responsibility of giving knowledge and wisdom, and among other things, and displaying the courage to use them in the face of adversity. You're not going to be popular a lot of times. Bob and Dwayne don't feel very popular sometimes. They might feel infamous, but they sometimes don't feel popular. And, you know, if a person is simply tries to stay popular, we have another word for them. It's called politicians. And, you know, that adversity that the father of the family may have may come from inside the family, or it may come from outside the family. And it'll probably be both at times. It'll be both at times. But when he does what's right, that's what we call leadership. Moses and Solomon asked God for help. And, you know, when Moses needed help, he says, "How can I judge this so great your people?" That's not exactly verbatim. Solomon said, "I need wisdom to lead your people." They understood the big task in front of them. They did not feel up to the job at all. And they wouldn't have been unless God would have helped them. But he asked, and they asked, and God answered. So when a man's family sees him fulfill his role as a godly father to them, he commands respect from them. They may not always acknowledge it. They may not even agree with some of the things that he does, some of the actions that he takes, and they won't sometimes. But they can't berate him for doing what's right, what he feels is right, or an action that he's taking, regardless of what the world around him says he ought to do or not to do. And to back that statement up, think about Noah. Here's the whole world ridiculing this man for building a boat that's never even rained before. Think about Moses, Abraham, and Job. Think about Job. The whole world turned against him, and he lost everything. We're not going to get done tonight. I don't know that it's going to take all next week. We still got a few minutes here. I want to do a little bit more.
The one thing that this bigger picture I'm getting after we've had this discussion about whether, you know, for example, and this came up earlier, so let's say you had a man that was married and his wife died 6 months ago. Well, could you put him in as an elder? And well, I think you could. But then let's say you had a man that his wife died 20 years ago. Well, how do we judge? How do we judge a person if he would be a good leader? Well, you judge by what you see. Well, if you haven't seen him operate with a family and a wife, and it's been 20 years, you know, I'm saying you couldn't make a very good judgment. Now, and on the other hand, he had a guy that was, his wife died just, like say, 2 or 3 months ago or 6 months ago. You would still be able to make a judgment. He was married to one wife. His family worked well together and all that sort of stuff. And you could actually witness. The people that are making the judgment would witness that. They would know.
Yeah. You have a point there, definitely, on you know how he has performed and probably will in the future. I guess my only thought would be, you know, when you have, you know, you have new people that come into the church, you know, and over a period of time after that, you know, how would they view him and et cetera. I don't, there's a lot of things to consider, but that's one of those things that you know, just have to be decided.
A lot of these are left up to the congregation to decide.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's in these gray areas really where the wisdom of God shines through as far as how he designed the selection of officers. That it's not brother so and so gets to pick who it is, and it's one of his decisions. It's a group of people, and it's a varying degree of opinions about how men should lead their families and lead the church to make the final decision. And a lot of these things sort themselves out in the majority of the congregation if it's a faithful congregation.
I just got one more thing to say here about fathers, and next week we'll move on to the children. You know, there's great adversity directed toward fathers in our society today. Towards a man who has a family and is the leader of that family. And if his wife is a Christian woman, there's great adversity directed towards her because she basically had him kicked the bum out. You know, there are television shows that says kick the bum out, you know. Well, if he's a Christian man, he's not a bum, he doesn't need to be kicked out. But
you're watching wrong TV.
Well, I didn't watch it. I was flipping through and I saw the caption. When, believe me, I didn't watch that show. But real fathers, you know, in our society are condemned as controlling. They're ridiculed as knuckle dragging Neanderthals and displayed in the media as inferior to women. But if he's a homosexual, he's not considered a threat to anybody, but really viewed as entertainment by men. So, you know, we know what our society is, but I just wanted to make the point that, you know, whether a man's an elder or a deacon or not, if he's a Christian father, there's a lot of adversity out there, and there's a lot of adversity towards a Christian wife also, because she's not, you know, someone that wants to get rid of her husband or whatever the case may be. So, anyhow, thank you for your comments. Clayton, I'm going to be up here again next week. I don't know if we'll go the whole week.